Welcome to the Millennial PhD, a podcast about creative survival and beyond. My name is Dr. Carmela Muzio Dormani, and I'm a sociologist, dancer, and creative consultant from New York. In these episodes, you'll find inspiration, ideas, and actionable tips for building new pathways forward in work and life. You'll hear from artists, activists, creative entrepreneurs, PhDs, and professional pivoters. We talk about radical humanity and practical steps to follow your dreams, even in the context of challenging social conditions. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder to follow the Millennial PhD on Instagram and to please take a minute to rate and review the Millennial PhD on Apple Podcasts. Your rating really helps the show reach as many listeners as possible. You can learn more about me and get access to free creative resources on the Millennial PhD Instagram page or at themillennialphd.com. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Welcome back to the Millennial PhD podcast. Today, I'm talking with Bridget Thorpe, who is the founder and CEO of Solvay, a value-based brand known for its innovative hybrid sports bra. Prior to launching Solvay, Bridget advised over 40 global Fortune 500 corporations across four continents to strategize and communicate their sustainability initiatives. She collaborated with design experts for 6 years who worked with the world's most influential activewear and luxury apparel brands to consciously redefine an athletic everyday staple. Raised in Hawaii, Bridget was originally going to be named Solvay, a family name that powerfully translates as Sunshine Way and as woman of the house. She received her BS and her MBA with honors. Bridget currently lives in Kauai with her husband, Elliot, and their dog, Panda. Bridget, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Oh, it's so great to be here today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you on. I'm really interested to hear about your brand and how you make it work, how you got started along that journey. And I will also say, I'm a sociologist, and as a sociologist, I'm inclined to looking toward kind of large scale social action, especially around the climate crisis, targeting corporations, critiquing and targeting capitalism in a large systemic way. But I am also someone that believes in like do what you can in the places that you can and make whatever inroads you can, right? Like revolution is the goal in terms of challenging these systems. But at the same time, meanwhile, here we are. So I'm fascinated to hear about the work that you do. And as always, interested in your story about how you started doing it. So thank you for coming on. And we can just start with, even though I did the bio, the formal bio, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you too. I'm all aboard like, oh, the revolution of climate action. It's such a deep passion, but there's progress over perfection, you know? So we're all making progress inch by inch. But yeah, I think right now I've got Solvay. I launched that about a year or so ago, which is an outdoor apparel brand that was really rooted in kind of my upbringing on Kauai, but it intersected really heavily with my journey in sustainability. So to kind of go to that, how did you get here question? It's funny. It's always like a winding road that hindsight's 2020. I would have never expected I ended up here, but I think honestly, like growing up in Hawaii, it's interesting out here because you've got American culture, but there's also like a deep Hawaiian culture out here too. And the relationship and kind of the respect and perspective on the environment and how you interact with the land and you nurture it is just something that was ingrained in me in like a really young age. So kind of growing up, like I had that as this undertone, and then family members that got LEED certified, which is a big sustainability certification for buildings, and just kind of these like points along the way that pulled me in. My MBA, actually, I had a governance focus too. So there was kind of this swirl of ESG that was coming together. And then, eventually I was kind of at a crossroads in life, and there's a group of organizations called B Corps. Does that ring a bell? Yeah. So B Corps, they like, I knew I wanted to work for a B Corp. I like hit that point in my career where I was like, I want to do something a bit deeper. And so I searched on this job board. I have like months and months. I mean, I must have gone through like 50 to 100 applications and like piles of rejection, and ended up working at this small company in Boulder, Colorado called Renewable Choice Energy that were really at the forefront of renewable energy and carbon offsets and renewable energy credits, and climbed the learning curve there. Shortly after, that company was acquired by a bigger company called Schneider Electric. And then it was just like, boom, through the roof. So I was like fully immersed in the sustainable world. And then COVID hit and I just had this really deep pull in me. One, I wanted to relocate with my family back to Hawaii. And two, I'd started this kind of the Solvay business years ago as more of a side hustle. And I really wanted to go all in and see like, okay, like how far can I take this if I go all in? So came back, and a lot of the part, like the motivation behind it, like outside of that female entrepreneurial journey, was to take those global Fortune 500 sustainability lessons and apply them to that SME world. Because, like global Fortune 500s, they're throwing around the heavyweight in terms of advancing climate action forward. But SMEs, like small to medium-sized enterprises, they make up about 80% of the global economy. So like, how are we going to move that forward? And I just wanted to like walk the talk rather than advise. And so, that's how I got here.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And maybe we can pause for a minute and you can tell us a little bit about what is a B Corp. And then there's another term, not SMEs, but there was another term that you used that I've seen come up that I probably should be familiar with. That's lead? Another abbreviation.
Maybe
SLGs.
Lead?
No. Lead SLGs or SMGs.
SDG.
Yes, there we go. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Can you break down what that is for us as well?
Yeah. All right. So we'll start with B Corp and then we'll move to the other two. So B Corp is something that it's funny. Like I honestly started seeing it at Trader Joe's on the backs of some of the brands that I would buy. They have like the B logo with the circle around it. But it's nice. Basically this voluntary movement to have your brand audited yearly. And you kind of get this like certification or this seal that you're a B Corp. And it means that your business does more than profits. It's about people, planet, and profit, you know? And what really drew me to it is it uses capitalism for good and incorporates like people and planet as like a heart of the strategy. So how do you advance the world through like a free market system? So they have like a handbook on it. It started years ago, but now it's just like totally exploded. And I think one of the best analogies that's helped me wrap my brain around the B Corp movement, not quite related, but it's kind of like if you go into the grocery store and you see fruits and vegetables, and then you see some that like have the organic USDA stamp. So B Corp is kind of like that organic USDA stamp for a business. It's very
cool. I think that's really helpful because I know a lot of people that listen to this, they're looking at a career pivot, maybe like a professional move. And so opening up that vocabulary for folks is super helpful. Thank you.
Oh yeah, totally. There's a B Corp jobs board too. Really great for people looking to head into that career. And it was just a very cool culture. So yeah, that's the B Corp thing. The other two terms were SME and SDGs. So SME, small to medium-sized enterprises. So if I'm right, I think that's 500 or less employees, which is really most businesses around the world. So how do we get the right tools in that population? And then the final one was SDGs, and that's Sustainable Development Goals. So that's a lot about how... I could go deep on this one too, but it started with like the Paris Agreement and the UN United Nations, and they have 17 Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, that are basically the world's blueprint for people, planet, and prosperity. So it's just a tool a lot of governments and then businesses now, which is really exciting, use to drive their ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance initiatives forward.
That's great. Thank you. And yeah, lots of terms for folks to sink their teeth into. That's great. So we left off, you were in 2020, you decided you wanted to move back and invest more in your brand and your entrepreneurial journey. What prompted that decision and how has it been going since then? Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the brand even.
Yeah, absolutely. So what prompted the decision, I think it was a mix of personal and family things. Like, it just made the most sense for me and my husband at the time. And I was ready for a career shift. The role I was in, I took it as far as I can go. And I've been doing this thing on the side for years. So I really wanted to like go on and do it. So what the brand is, it's Solvay. And thank you so much for that amazing bio at the beginning. it translates to either Sunshine Away or Woman of the House. And I loved that Woman of the House translation. I had no idea about it. But I just loved how empowering that felt. It was originally what my parents were going to name me a long time ago, and they went with Bridget instead. But what the brand is it honestly started, I grew up with a pretty active lifestyle in Kauai. And a lot of the times you're running on the beach, you're going to your yoga classes, whatever type of workouts you like, but you're also involved in a lot of water sports and you kind of want to transition seamlessly between the two. At local surf shops, I saw that there was a lot of like hybrid apparel products for men, especially like shorts that they could wear in and out of the water. But I couldn't find the equivalent in the women's market. So there wasn't like a great sports bra for ocean sports. So that's kind of what started the journey. And I had absolutely no background whatsoever in cut and sew apparel. So it was really lucky to connect with this lovely woman on the East Coast. Her name's Claire. And she had done product and pattern development for Adidas, Lululemon, Coach Swim, Under Armour, like this whole list. And she was great because when I built the brand, kind of having that sustainability undertone, like I was really resolute that I wanted it made in the United States. And I wanted some type of regenerative or recycled textiles, and to keep as much of the supply chain as possible in the US because it helps regulate your carbon footprint when you can kind of bring in your supply chain a bit closer. You know, you're managing those emissions. So we worked, Claire and I worked on the patterns and everything for about 6 years almost. Wow. And then, it was a journey and a lot of really amazing girlfriends that would go into restaurant bathrooms and try on the tops for me so I could get the fit just right. And then coming back to Hawaii, I'd finally climbed the learning curve enough to work with a really amazing factory in Baltimore. So they are the ones that produce the styles. They've worked with all the bigger brands too. So it was just felt good because it's something that I could scale with. And it just kind of took off from there. It's one thing that's really cool about Hawaii is you're remote, right? You're not really connected to a ton of resources. So there's like a deeply creative community out here. And kind of what I was lacking in resources, I gained an inspiration just being surrounded by so many female entrepreneurs and people out here that are just trying to make that world and that part of the economy blossom. So that's Solvay in a nutshell.
Yeah. And so you just started alluding to this kind of the creativity piece, but what are some of the skills that you feel like you draw on most frequently now in your work?
Yeah.
So
it's so funny. Just prior to launching Solvay, I joined this entrepreneurial accelerator with this private equity group on Oahu. And I walked into that thing and I was like, I went to business school. I got an MBA. Like, I'm going to fly through this thing. And then I got like smashed with reality. Like, unfortunately, if I'm being like totally honest, my MBA did not prepare me the way I thought it would for entrepreneurship. It prepared me for a broader global business environment, but like bootstrapping, like just getting your hands dirty and figuring it out, that's something I've either had to teach myself or I gained a lot from that accelerator program. So it was a really different mindset. And yeah, that kind of shocked me. And then the second part was just kind of like the skill set I draw on is I was really lucky to be exposed to so much in the sustainability world and really look under the hood at how the biggest brands in the world are advancing a more sustainable and a more circular economy. So I'm happy to kind of go into circularity too, if that's helpful. But so I kind of had this, the business part, I thought I had what I needed, but I had to kind of dig a bit deeper and get a little grittier and figure out how to do it in a different way. And then also translate all that sustainability stuff in a way that would actually work. So far, so good. But it's every day is a new day.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like I haven't had too many MBAs on the podcast before. And so this topic that you're kind of cracking into a little bit about, I guess we could say like the ups and downs or the things that it does prepare or maybe doesn't quite prepare you for is fascinating. We haven't talked about that much. Is there more that you'd want to say about that or be open to saying about that?
Yeah, totally. So I think looking back, I have no regrets about getting the MBA. Like if I'm being like brutally honest again, I went to business school at the University of Colorado and chose business because I really couldn't decide what I wanted to do. And I was like,
I don't think you're alone in that at all. Like, I think it's common business, sociology. We pick up a lot of students in that way too, for sure. Yeah.
Where can I still like be exposed to so many things after? So I did that and then graduated and was still not quite sure. So just kept going because I knew I could just get the graduate program done in about a year and a half. So, and I had the academic momentum, but it was funny. Like I went to grad school at San Diego State University and that's where I got introduced to B Corps and value-based businesses. And there was a lot of just gritty entrepreneurs in that MBA program, that went on to start like value-based brands. And at that time, like Tom's Shoes, the one where you kind of like buy a pair and they give a pair of shoes, that was like blowing up at that time. A lot of kind of similar things happened. So I got that exposure. And then I also got exposure to like governance and sustainability and everything, which I didn't quite know about before. So the ups, that was the ups from that whole MBA experience is I wanted that credential and I got exposed to the areas that like really resonated with me. But the downs were just like the tactical skills to actually like prepare me for the world of entrepreneurship. Like it just wasn't there. Like it's just, and I asked like the board people like one time and I was like, do you have any like bootstrapping classes? Or like something on like how to legit start something from the ground up. And they're like, no, we don't. I'm like, okay. that's kind of the downs that I'm experiencing right now. And also too, like just being with Schneider Electric for as long as I was and hiring people, like it was really rare that we looked deep into education. They wanted to see experience, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's funny. I think that sometimes, at least in our culture, there's this feeling that you have to have this education, you need to do this. But when in reality, I've kind of found that experience speaks a lot. And what I'm interested in now, like I had a visitor come visit me a little while ago. She's in her late 50s and she's going after her PhD right now. And it was just funny because I'm sure you could totally talk to this. Like a lot of my friends that have pursued their PhDs are like really tired. And they're just like, it was a grind. And she's in her late 50s. She knows absolutely exactly what she wants to do. And it invigorates her. It was like this totally different thing. So kind of personally, I've been trying to wrap my brain around this, like, why do we go after education? And like, why do we have to do it at this age? And like, I don't know, I haven't thought it through all the way.
Yeah, I think those are the ongoing questions that a lot of people are looking at right now, about how can we build differently in terms of how we use grad school, education in general, the pathways that come out of that education, which have not been working for a lot of people. in the way that many of us hoped that they would when we went into these programs. So that's a fascinating perspective on that.
Yeah. I was listening to this podcast the other day. I listened to a lot of podcasts in the afternoon. it was one with Brené Brown, and she was talking about how her daughter is going to college. And she was basically saying, like, if you know exactly what you want to do when you, like, day one freshman year, she's like, I'm not paying for it. She's like, I want you to take, like, that year or so to take fun electives and just follow your curiosity and find out what actually moves you, because that's where you're going to do your best work. And that's what I'm interested in investing in for you. And I was like, that sounds so cool. Like, rather than like, I need this piece of paper and like, how do you get this type of security? Like, yeah, how do we shift it? So it is more of, where are you going to do your best work? And like, how do you grow from that?
Yeah. And it would be great if that sort of experience were accessible to more people than it currently is, for sure.
That's 100%.
Yeah. So let's pivot a little bit, because I like to get into this kind of like nuts and bolts conversation with people, just to demystify some of the day-to-day things that go on, especially for entrepreneurs. So can you tell me a little bit about what a typical day looks like for you these days?
Yeah. So I start early. Being on Hawaii time, you kind of have to get going closer to like 5 or 6 in the morning to stay on par with the rest of the state. So normally like wake up, and I've been trying really hard to not open my phone first thing in the morning.
The struggle.
And it's like, even though like I'll have these days where I'm like, I woke up, I had a glass of water, I like went for a walk, like my day is so much better. But yeah, like I've been trying really hard to work on that. But so on a good day, I try to fit in some sort of movement and then kind of go to emails and get that done. I also, I've been I've ridden horses my whole life. So I take care of some horses down the road. So normally mid-morning I go do the chores with the horses and get them all set up. And then, yeah, meetings and emails. And that is kind of like the difficult part of entrepreneurship. And especially when you're more of a solopreneur, or just have a smaller network of contractors that you collaborate with. There's so many different ways that you can go about your day. Whereas in kind of more bigger team jobs, there's more room to react. You have to be so proactive 100% of the time. So it's definitely been a big shift for me. I'm looking at these post-it notes and this whiteboard I have behind me on like priorities and developing traction and where to have like segments of intention throughout the day. So on a good day, I kind of follow that. And on other days, you kind of put out fires and do what you need to do. And then in the afternoons, my husband's been better at this. When we moved out here, I'm like, I can surf, like I can help teach him. And like within a month, he'd like clearly surpassed my surf skill. we have our dog Panda. So try to get to the beach when we can and be cognizant about just trying to move around outside. And, we're normally in bed by 8 o'clock. That's the mid 30s for you.
Just second interview in a row that I've had with someone who says pretty much that similar skill, like up early and in bed by 8. I'm not quite there yet, but I strive.
Oh my gosh, the never ending battle to be a morning person. One day I want to be good at it.
Yeah. What would you say is a rose and a thorn for you about the work that you do? So something you really love about it and something that is maybe not so fantastic.
Yeah, I think especially with Solvay, I didn't expect to be connected with so many diverse and interesting crowds. Like I knew clearly I'd be meeting some very cool and intelligent people, but yeah, like yesterday I was talking to people in New Zealand, and then I've got someone in New Zealand that's going to help me bring product back to Hawaii. And then they've got speaking engagements in New Hampshire that I'm going to help be on like this classroom style lecture for. So I just kind of like the exposure you get to all these different creatives is interesting. And also too, I think that was one thing that really surprised me about entrepreneurship is just like the way creativity and intelligence, surfaces itself, if that makes sense. Like I felt in the corporate world, which there that equally has roses and thorns, but there was just in the entrepreneurial world more space to connect on like a personal level, and kind of business tends to be a bit more personal. And I think it's because you've got entrepreneurs that pour their hearts into everything, you know? So I think that that's been definitely like the rose side. The thorn side, I'd say, has been, I mean, one, the obvious one, it's tough getting financial traction with a starting business. So just like, oh, the emotional roller coaster ride that goes with that. And just also too, it's not consistent, you know, you don't get a paycheck every 2 weeks. It comes in ebbs and flows. And so how to just adjust to that rhythm of life. And the other type of thorn is just, again, like working through that sustainability stuff. Like I was just shocked when I got in it. I'd been so immersed in that, the global Fortune 500 world. I never really dug deep enough into that SME or small to medium enterprises world. And there's just not a lot of tools available that make integrating sustainability into your business like easy, you know? Like I'm of the belief that sustainability needs to be a department that has the same amount of gravitas as accounting, as finance, as marketing. It's just accepted. It's doing business responsibly, you know, like that's my hope and kind of my overall career mission is to help to promote that. But yeah, it's just the actual tools or the software systems or the apps you can put in your Shopify store. They're out there and they're growing, but it still has a long runway to develop. And also too, there's, and I totally get it. There's a lot of businesses that they're just not quite there yet. On the side, I host some webinars and such for the kind of a larger small business community on Oahu. And they just need to worry about paying their employees, you know, like they have to get the basics done, you know, there's fundamentals. And so this stuff kind of goes to the wayside. So that's a bit of like a thorn, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, if somebody came to you and they have a small business with maybe a couple of employees, maybe thinking more product-based business rather than service,
sure.
What is one or two things that they might be able to quickly and easily do to make to minimize their footprint or to make their business more ecologically sustainable?
Totally. That's a great question. So if it's a product-based business, the first thing that I would recommend is going to a website called the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. They're based in Europe and it's founded by Ellen MacArthur, who's just this badass that like took her sailboat around the world and she's advancing the circular economy. So very quick nutshell on a circular economy. Our current economy is based on this, it's a take, make, waste system. So industrial revolution kicked off in like the 1700s-ish, major gains for the world. Like all the comforts we enjoy today are thanks to the industrial revolution, but it's been a few hundred years and we're starting to see the negative externalities of that, you know, like pollution, labor things, like it's just not quite working. So just as the industrial revolution was really disruptive, we kind of need that disruption again. And that's circularity. And that's basically where you, instead of take, make, waste, where you take resources to make things and end up getting thrown away, you keep materials in use, you design out waste from the get-go, and you try to regenerate natural systems. So, that's kind of the foundation of circularity. If you have a product-based business or you're curious about it, Ellen MacArthur is the gold standard resource on how to learn about that and just help you think about designing your product in a circular mindset from the get-go. So that would be advice number one. Advice number two is to measure your carbon footprint. You know, this is really easy to do for a service-based business too. And even a product-based business, well, unfortunately, like the tools and the software to help you do it right now are like not quite prevalent. The benefit is you can kind of wrap your arms around that data. So For Solvay, I work with this organization called Native. It's a public benefit corporation. I believe they're based in Vermont, but don't quote me on that. Some, I think a lot are remote now too. But just like the most amazing team. You could go to Native's website on your own too and like find out your own personal carbon footprint. But they've been incredible at helping me calculate my carbon footprint for Solvay, keep things organized, and then invest in third-party certified carbon offsets. So what a carbon offset does is it's basically you generate emissions through your business. A carbon offset is designed to decrease or kind of absorb the impact of emissions. On the grand scale of things, is it ideal? Well, on the grand scale, you probably wouldn't generate emissions in the first place. But especially if you're a small business, I still believe it's best to do something because there's a lot of systematic change that still needs to occur. Like when I ship you one of our hybrid sports bras, it's unfortunately not coming to you by sailboat or solar powered car, right? Like there's just still some like realities of the world that need to advance. So number one, Ellen MacArthur circularity. Number two, Native or any competing company are great to help you calculate and offset your carbon footprint. And then number three, just quickly, just be very mindful about greenwashing. I think a lot of small companies come up and they get excited and they want to share like, this is what we're doing. But my best advice is if you say like, we have recycled fabrics, so you feel good about what you're wearing, I would consider that greenwashing. That doesn't really give me anything to work off of. But if you say, we source our fabrics from this company in this location, they are certified by this standard and have been tested to this thing, you know, like then you actually have some information to work with. And just keep in mind, like you don't have to like stick the landing every time. If you say like, we're using these materials, this is sustainable or good about them, and this is stuff we're working on and we hope to improve, like right on, like you're doing it, you know, like it's better to be honest and transparent than don't fall in the greenwashing trap, you know? So.
Thank you for sharing those super actionable and really helpful tips and information. And thank you also for bringing some of that vocabulary that you just did, like greenwashing. I'm not sure that that's in people's vernacular if they're not already kind of like in touch with or you know, knee deep in the sustainability universe. And that's so helpful, right? Because it exposes people to a larger way, a larger conversation that's already happening. So I appreciate that. Before I ask you about, let's see, parting advice, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you wanted to talk about or put out there in the world?
Oh, I don't know. No, this has been like such a fun conversation and I love just being able to kind of explore all the angles from a very fun way and really appreciate the opportunity to share more about Solvay. So yeah, that feels good.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have any general parting advice if somebody came to you, maybe particularly women or other folks who have been marginalized from the entrepreneurial space, if someone came to you and said, I want to do something like what you're doing, what are like a couple of first steps to get started on that entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, I think I was really lucky when I was younger, earlier in my career, I was like college level internships. I worked at this hotel in Hawaii and the entire executive board was all women. And I didn't realize that at the time, but it turned out to like give me a lot of confidence later on in my career. And one of the women, I like left, I'm like, okay, like I'm going to college now. What do you got for me? And she's like, Bridget, the best career advice I can give you is do everything you want to do. Like just do everything you want to do. And that advice has helped me so much because it's been able, like moving back to Hawaii and leaving the security of a corporate job was really scary. But I have no regrets. Like I'm happy and I'm fulfilled. And no matter what comes out of it, like I know I'm doing everything I want to do. So I love that advice. And I think it's a great way to live. But with that, we had to prepare financially in a major way to like figure that out. Like sometimes it just takes time. So Like, if you want to start a business, like, start it as a side hustle. Like, take your time and honestly give yourself 6 months or so to actually figure out, like, is this something I really want to do? Because you're going to just learn a whole lot about it that you may have not expected. And then three, like, once you kind of get to that point, if you decide, like, yeah, this is something I want to create more space for or anything like that, just know there's, like, this whole underground, not underground, it's very much above ground, but I was so new to it, it felt underground, community of organizations out there to help you. Like, one that I really love is called iFund Women. They have so definitely check out iFund Women. There's the W Marketplace. If you have a product-based business, it's like kind of like the Etsy, but it's all women owned. But iFund Women, I loved especially. And there's so many other communities around that because they teach you how to create a pitch deck, to raise funds, to crowdsource things, to connect with other investors, to connect with mentors and entrepreneurs. So find communities, find organizations that can keep you motivated, keep you inspired, and connect you to the resources you'll need to grow.
Great. Thank you so much. I love that. That's great advice. I really appreciate you coming on. Again, all of the information will be linked in the show notes, the websites that were mentioned, definitely Solvay. And Bridget, where can people connect with you?
Yeah, so our website is solvay.co, which is SOLVAE.co. So anything that goes to that contact page comes straight to me. Also, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. It's Bridget Thorpe. And you can also find us at Instagram at Soul_VAE. And we're there.
Great. Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode of the Millennial PhD. You can find more content, resources, and information on Instagram at the Millennial PhD and at themillennialphd.com. In this collective moment of reevaluating our relationships with work and exploitation, I look forward to connecting with you and building stronger bonds of community and collaboration. I would love to hear from you via email at themillennialphd@gmail.com with any feedback, comments, questions, or concerns, or if you're interested in coming on the show as a guest. That's all for now. It's been real. See you next time.